This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
To get to coming up. Ben Simmons injured last night. What does that now mean for the Sixers? That wasn't great, but we will discuss. Hey, how is Cam Newton going to handle the Bill Belichick treatment? We'll find out. And Allen Iverson weighing in on the great GOAT debate. I bet you his answer surprises you. But we will start in the bubble last night with the LA Lakers hosting the OKC Thunder. Very gracious hosts, I might add, allowing the Thunder to do as they please. Lakers shooting just 35% from the field in this one, shooting a season low 5 of 37 from deep. As for LeBron James and Anthony Davis, together shooting only 33%. That's their worst field goal percentage as teammates. So Lakers lose to the Thunder. They now fall to 2-2 in the bubble. Nick, I'll start with you. How concerning were the Lakers in their blowout loss to the Thunder last night?
This was the single worst offensive game the Lakers have played all year. And I think I'm going to surprise the audience here, but I've got a semi-major announcement, or I guess a couple of them. Based on what we've seen in the bubble, the Los Angeles Lakers aren't the best team in basketball. They're not the favorites to win the title. And based on what we've seen in the bubble, LeBron James isn't the best player in the league. So, congratulations to the Phoenix Suns, who are clearly the favorites, and T.J. Warren, who now holds the championship belt of best player alive.
From LeBron.
Because we need to base our analysis fully and totally and solely on these first four games of the bubble. And the Lakers have had their three lowest field goal percentages of the season in the Clipper game, the Toronto game, and then the game last night. They have the worst offense in the bubble. So, listen, clearly LeBron's old and busted. Anthony Davis wasn't that good. And the Lakers be lucky if they get out of the first round. I mean, that's one way to do it.
That's true.
The other way is they ain't shooting well. They got no motivation after they beat the Clippers in the one game they needed to win in the bubble when LeBron shut down Kawhi and Paul George at the end of the game after hitting the game-winning shot. I know that happened so long ago we forgot about it. It was 5 days ago. And so because of that, they are, listen, lack of motivation, LeBron not playing well, and the single worst shooting any team has had thus far in the bubble and maybe all season over the last week, it's Broussard. It's been a perfect storm of suck, but I am, contrary to how I started, I am not going to overreact. I think the Lakers will be absolutely fine, and once they get the real LeBron James back, they will look like they have looked, Broussard, I believe, throughout the entirety of the season.
I'm frightened, I'm terrified, I'm scared, because I actually agree with Nick Wright. I mean,
there we go.
The Clippers happens. And the Bucks are 1-2, and T.J. Warren looks like Michael Jordan. I mean, let's not overreact to what's going on in the bubble.
And it's look, bizarre LeBron, world.
It is bizarre world. And LeBron has made references to, you know, adjusting and things off the court that he didn't want to get into. He mentioned after the game. He's obviously said he misses his family desperately and his mother. So maybe there's some stuff off the court where he's just adjusting to not being with his family. It's stunning to see him, of all people, shoot 42% because LeBron is always an efficient scorer. It's stunning to see Anthony Davis have 9 points in a game because you rarely see a player of that stature, Joel Embiid notwithstanding, ever have a game where they score in single digits. So it's a bit odd. But I'm not going to overreact like Nick said. And one thing I think about LeBron, if you just go back in his history, I remember his rookie year, preseason, looked bad. And his first game ever, which I was at in Sacramento, he plays like a Hall of Famer right away as soon as he gets in the NBA, 28 points. We've seen him in the past at times struggle in the regular season, particularly in Cleveland last year, at times just coast. And then here come the playoffs, and he turns it up. I think that LeBron, you know, do meaningless games really mean anything to him? And I, especially at this stage of his career. So he may just be coasting, getting himself in shape, trying to get other guys involved. And I have no doubt that when the playoffs come, we will see the real LeBron James. But what is a little bit concerning is the shooting, because they have gotten open looks. And they have been missing. And they're not a great three-point shooting team anyway. They were 23rd in the league in three-point percentage. So that has to change. When Kyle Kuzma's your most consistent guy, that's a bit scary.
So, Nick, tell me if you subscribe to this theory. There's an old joke. It says if, like, someone's got to be the number one heart surgeon in America, and he put it on, of course, I'm the number one heart surgeon in the world. Like, all right, well, if we're going to start ranking heart surgeons, that means someone is dead last in heart surgery and someone's got an appointment with him this week. So when LeBron talks about big games, we know he shows up for big games. He shows up. We know he's going to show up on Christmas. We know he's going to show up in the playoffs. And when you looked at this schedule and we talked about how important the number one seed was for him, he clinched it. They're not going after their Bucks, so it's literally nothing to play for. I think there's just, you can take sort of a mental vacation. I'm not putting any sort of credence into this game at all.
Hey, good. So I thought Jenna was going to jump in. My apologies. Go ahead, Jenna. Yes, please. No, Jenna, go.
Can something be said for momentum? Can something be said for these guys? We're off for a couple of months.
Good question.
Sure, it was a meaningless game. They already clinched the top seed, but how about ramping it up and working on that three-point shooting and working on all the little things?
Well,
can something be said for what that ramp up would look like heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, so I guess 2 points there. One is the shooting part, no matter how meaningful or meaningless a game is, you're always trying to make jump shots, and they are just missing open jump shots. Now, I am hesitant to say, like, it's the sight lines. It's weird. We hear about shooters in different arenas, how it feels for them. Because I did hear before the bubble started, some shooters say it is perfect for shooters because of the sight lines. So I just think they are just flatly missing open shots. And this is why I do think for the Lakers, that one seed that they clinched a few days ago is so critically important for them. Because they are going to, particularly LeBron, be able to get back in the flow of things in games that matter against whomever they play in that eight spot is going to be a bad defensive team. Whether you get New Orleans, Memphis now without Jaren Jackson, which is falling apart, or Portland, LeBron is going to get back in rhythm offensively in that first round series. Had they not taken the regular season seriously, Broussard, I would be more concerned right now, because you'd be staring at a first round matchup potentially against Dallas, who has a great player. I heard a scurrilous rumor last night, Broussard, that you went on the radio and said that they've got the greatest 20-year-old player of all time. I couldn't believe it was true. I whoever said it to me, I was like, no, Broussard, as much as I love Luka, Broussard wouldn't have said that about LeBron. But regardless, they've got a great player, and that could be, you go into a Mavericks series with no home court advantage and a cold, and they put 125 on you in game one, and all of a sudden it's an uphill battle. So I think, Chris, because they're the one seed, they're going to be able to ramp up once the playoffs actually begin. And yeah, they got to hit shots. Danny Green's got to hit his open shots, Broussard, and LeBron's got to play well. He hasn't played well yet, except at the very end of the Clipper game. I just don't think that will repeat itself.
Yeah, I agree with you. Look, I think you're overstating the value of the one seed. It certainly helps, because I think they're getting Portland. And while Portland isn't great defensively, and certainly they don't have an answer for LeBron James, they do shoot the lights out. And because of the play-in game, which I'm certain is going to happen, or play-in series, I think that the Lakers won't have, you know, they won't know exactly who they're facing in that first round like the other seven, you know, the other seeds in the West. So it won't be as huge of an advantage, I don't think, as you're saying. But I do think that it will. The Lakers will win it, whoever they play. And I think by the time they get to the second round where they've got a team, maybe a Houston, that can challenge them, I expect them to be playing well, particularly LeBron James to be playing well. I did say Luka has been the best 20-year-old we've ever seen statistically.
Oh my God. It's true.
Leading his team.
Oh my God, it's true.
Now, I'm willing to rethink it.
Okay.
But statistically, and as far as leading his team to the playoffs in the mighty West, it's hard to argue. Only two players have done what he's done.
Don't succumb to Nick Wright, Fletcher, Broussard.
No, I know. I'm just saying. I'm willing to think about it. But Luka, he's accomplished more than LeBron did at 20.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
All right, moving on, talk some football now. The Pats plan with Brady out and Cam in, many wondering how the new Patriots quarterback's going to mesh with his Hall of Fame coach, Bill Belichick. And before you quip, oh, just fine, Jenna, listen to former Patriot and Panthers defensive tackle Kyle Love weighing in. He said this: I don't feel like Cam can take the pressure of coaches talking down about his play. If he had a bad game in Carolina, the coaching staff wouldn't say much to him because they may have felt he could be a little frail about it, or maybe pout. They never really corrected to the point Bill used to correct Tom. Coach Mangini, we'll start with you. You think this is going to be a problem for Cam Newton in Carolina with the Patriots under Bill Belichick?
Yeah, I've said this all along. I said this before they signed him, that you know, from a personality standpoint, it could be an issue. And now we're here, and you're hearing Kyle Love talk about how difficult it is to operate in that system, and it's not for everybody. There's an additional part to this quote where he says specifically that, and I've said this over and over again. When you go to New England, it's a different type of coaching, and everybody is fair game. It's not like certain guys are treated with kid gloves. Everybody gets the same level of coaching, and guys aren't used to that. You've seen it happen with Adalius Thomas. You saw it happen with Michael Bennett. To some degree, you saw it happen with Greg Schiano. It's a system that is different. It's hard. It's hard every single day. And not every person is equipped to deal with that. And it's going to be interesting, you know, assuming Cam is healthy, to see how he does fit into that system and deals with that type of consistent hard coaching.
And so, Coach, here's why, even though this is, you're 100% right, one of the major concerns you raised initially and throughout, here's why I still am not concerned about it. 2 points. One is, to be fair to Cam, Kyle Love is a defensive tackle. And I only say that to say maybe it's true that in the full team meetings with Ron Rivera, Cam wasn't hardly criticized or picked at the way Belichick might do with his players. But Kyle Love has no idea whatsoever what it was like in the quarterback rooms with the quarterback coach, with the offensive coordinator, the type of scrutiny Cam was under. And I would imagine it was quite a bit because his last healthy year in Carolina, he successfully rebuilt his throwing motion. But let's just take this quote at face value. The reason that this is not a concern for me is because the way Belichick coaches is not some state secret. Everyone from Eric Mangini, who was there to see it, to Kevin Wilde's kids, who are now Patrick Mahomes fans, by the way, know that Bill Belichick is a tough son of a gun. That Bill Belichick's going to tell you whether you're Tom Brady or the 53rd guy on the roster, if you stink or not, or if you were bad in that game or on that play. And despite that, Cam chose to go there. And here's one thing we unequivocally know. It wasn't for the money. Cam's got buckets of money. All reports are he's done very well financially, on and off the field, and hadn't spent a ton of it. And they're paying him nothing. So Cam made the affirmative choice to go play for that man. And he's not a dope. And so he knows he's going to be coached differently, and he signed up for it, Coach. So I just want to kick it back to you quickly, Coach. Like, does that resonate with you at all, that even if this is not the way Cam has been coached previously, that maybe he wants to be coached that way? Maybe he knows he needs to be, or he just knows this is the cost of doing business if I'm going to be able to play for New England.
100%. Everybody knows that it's hard, and everybody thinks that they understand what hard is. It's like running a marathon. You know a marathon is going to be hard, but until you do it, you don't really appreciate how hard it is.
So tell us, Coach.
Now, the question is whether or not it's, oh my God, it's so hard. After my first few, I got used to it. It's different in New England because it's every day. And even though you may go in with the mindset of this is something I can deal with, it's the question of whether or not you can deal with it day in and day out. And I'm not saying that Cam can't do it. I'm just saying if you are not used to this, it's a pretty big adjustment. And when you've been a star for a long time and when you're used to one way of dealing with coaching and suddenly you're thrust into a system that's radically different, it's a shock to the system. And we have seen other good players and good coaches who went in with their eyes wide open not be able to operate in that system successfully.
So, Coach, I want to tell you this story. I don't know if you listened to the entirety of the Allen Iverson Fat Joe interview, but there was a good part in there Iverson talked about – you haven't heard – yeah, okay. Iverson talked about Larry Brown, and Larry Brown said, hey, I need you in my office. They come into the office and said, hey, I'm just going to kill you in practice today. I'm just going to destroy you. Anything you do, I'm going to destroy you, and please don't say anything. And Iverson agrees. They say, okay. They go out to practice, and Larry Brown is just on top of Iverson the entire practice. After practice, Iverson is, like, losing his mind. He's upset. It's a bad scene. Larry Brown asks the trainer, hey, can you go grab Iverson, brings him in, and sits him down, and Iverson's still furious. He feels like he's been sort of, like, really – you know, treated unfairly. So Larry Brown apologizes and thanks him. He says, sorry I had to do that, but thank you. Now I have the entire team. Now that they saw me criticize you, now we can run the team together and no one will ever say anything to me or challenge my authority because I was able to, you know, treat you harshly in practice. And Iverson said, you're a genius. And then they rolled together to the finals. So the question is, long story, is part of Belichick's power the ability to criticize Tom? And since Tom's not there, does Belichick lose any authority?
Yeah, Kevin, tell me the one story you've heard about Bill bringing someone into his office and apologizing for criticizing him. And you won't hear that story, you know, 20 years from now either. And look, that's a more typical way of dealing with criticism or coach, we still call it criticism, a coaching of star players where you give them the heads up, everybody sees it. But players know what's really taking place. And one of the great things about New England is it is an egalitarian system. Everybody is treated the same, and guys appreciate that. Guys respect that. And when Tom Brady was there, and everybody saw that the greatest player of all time was being treated the same way and was being coached hard and was being held to a high level and was accepting it, it made it easier for guys like Randy Moss or anybody else who came in, Corey Dillon from a different system, to say, okay, well, if he's doing it, I can do it too. But now Cam is in that position that Tom was in, so it's radically different. They've never been in this space before, where the leader, the face of the franchise, the quarterback, now has to suddenly get it used to the way this system has operated at a high level for a long time.
I think that's a brilliant point. And I think the Wilds, the story AI told about Larry Brown, it seems like that is, for not all, but for a lot of great coach-player combos, that's the deal. That's always been the story of Duncan and Pop, is that Pop would crush Duncan when he needed to, and Duncan would take it like a champ. And so everyone knew if he's after me, he's not playing favorites. So yes, Cam obviously has to, whatever diva ego that all of us have to differing levels, he's going to have to set that aside. But I do think, Coach, it's important to look at this from a different angle as well, which is, and this is not a shot at Ron Rivera, Cam has only played for one organization, one head coach, and one kind of philosophy. Cam also has never been with an organization that goes into every game with the, you know, to misquote, I think it was Charlie Weiss, a decided schematic advantage over each of their opponent because of coaching, because of preparation, because of the way they know the rule book better than everywhere else. And I think, as much as we're talking about how is Cam potentially going to negatively react to if he's called out in a meeting, we also need to open our minds to the possibility of how much will Cam positively react to all of a sudden being with the team where it's like, oh my God, I played terribly and we won. Oh my God, Josh McDaniels said if we run this play on the third play of the game, when we run it again on the 13th, this guy's going to be open. And he was right. Like, there is the possibility, I mean, tell me if you disagree, Coach, that Cam is going to experience professional football in a way differently than he ever has, not just because he's going to get yelled at in some meetings sometimes, but because for things he will enjoy and things he will be able to take advantage of, that might be a rejuvenating force to a degree, Coach.
I think that's a great point, and I hope that's true. If he's open to embracing the system and open to playing egoless football and growing at this stage in his career, this is a tremendous opportunity for him to learn football in a different way. And that's not a knock on where he was. It's just, it's different in New England. It's a system that I truly believe in. And I hope that he's open to it, because you'll see a different guy and huge amounts of both personal and professional growth.
Hey, Jenna, doesn't Nick sound more like a Patriots fan today than ever before? That was fantastic.
Drawing a blank. The Grizzlies fell to the Utah Jazz last night. Memphis now 0-4 in the bubble. That's not great. Just one game up on the Blazers for the 8th seed in the West. Also not great. Nick, the Grizzlies remaining winless in the bubble is blank.
Similar to you affecting my terminology of that ain't great to where I can no longer use it. A total disaster. Just a total disaster, Jenna. I feel so terribly for the great people of the great city of Memphis. Jaren Jackson Jr. out for the rest of the year with an injury. He's been their second best player. Mathematically speaking, Broussard headed into the bubble. For the Grizzlies to not make the play-in game, let me say it a different way. They were 98.5% to at least make the play-in game. They now have a real chance of not making it. 0-8 is on the board for them It is just a total disaster, and it makes me sad for them and Taylor Jenkins, who had done such a great job. Those heartbreaking losses in the bubble early, though, seem to have just killed them, Chris.
Yeah, I had Taylor Jenkins as third on my Coach of the Year ballot, which was justified because obviously these games don't count toward the voting. But yeah, this is a sign of doom. They're done. They could go 0-8. They got Oklahoma City, Toronto, Boston, and Milwaukee. And Jaren Jackson, as you mentioned, is out. I don't think they'll make the play-in game. They're only two games up on San Antonio and New Orleans. And, of course, Portland is right there a game back. I think Memphis falls all the way out of the play-in.
Wow. I'm gonna debut a new theory. The bubble paradox. And I know the Grizzlies have a super hard schedule, like you said, Broussard, but I think these great teams are actually going to chill out. Bucks aren't going to play hard in their last game. The Raptors are on a little bit of a run here. They could be like, you know what? Why don't we take a breath against the Grizzlies? Celtics, maybe we want to see Kemba sort of ramp up a little bit. And OKC on a back-to-back, I don't think it'll work either. So I think this bubble paradox, these teams look tough, but I don't think you're going to get them at full strength, Jenna.
I like it. That was the Lakers mentality last night. Scary moment yesterday when Ben Simmons had to leave the game early with a knee injury. While his MRI came back clean, he will remain day to day. In his absence, a guy by the name of Joel Embiid stepping up, dropping 30 points, 11 rebounds in the Sixers' win over the Wizards. Maybe the writing's on the wall here, guys. One, but not both of them. Nick, Embiid's performance without Simmons was blank.
I mean, the bare minimum. Hey, listen, this is not a knock at Joel. Joel's one of the 10 best basketball players alive. Your team has to win the game, and you're playing a team that as currently constructed, that roster might not win the G League title. So, like, I'm not going to give some Broussard, good, 30 and 11. That's exactly what you're supposed to do. Good job, congrats, and move on. Like, it's the bare minimum given this situation, Broussard.
I think it's typical. Look, one of the biggest indictments of the Sixers coaching staff is they have not found a way to maximize Simmons and Embiid together. There's no doubt that each of them plays better without the other one on the court. And that's up to the coaching staff to figure out how to make those two work. So Embiid plays closer to the basket when Simmons is not there. He doesn't shoot as many threes. He gets more free throw attempts because he plays like a big man. And I think that's the problem with the Sixers. Simmons will be back, which is great, but that's going to force Embiid back out to the three-point line, and he won't be at his best.
Yeah, I went with nerve-wracking. This game was closer than the final score indicated, too. I just want to see Ben hobble off. I think we're just losing any sort of hope that the Sixers can have my miraculous 29-2 at home run that I was trying to, you know, push the nation, that I've gotten rid of that. Now I'm just all Dame time all the time. I've abandoned that take, Nick, so don't bring it up again.
And B just getting crushed after his 30-point performance. All right, to steal another word from Nick, because you enjoyed that and great so much. So the Thunder now, they the Lakers.
See, so Jenna, here's the problem. So, listen, Jenna, so the problem is, our censors and our producers heard you trying to plagiarize me on the air, so they cut your mic. Thank you for that, America. Chris Paul's performance last night was MVP-ish. Chris Broussard always mentioned it. Oh, I had this guy on my ballot. I had that guy on my ballot. I have a ballot. Nick, did you know I have a ballot? Do you know who this guy right here had third place on his MVP ballot that the NBA returned to me unread? Chris Paul. And it's a perfect night for him because the 21-7-6 is not really MVP numbers. But if you watch the game, the way he controlled it, the way he was the best player on the court last night, and the Thunder got the win, that's the main heart of Chris Paul's MVP case, or at least to make the ballot. So I say MVP-ish, Broussard.
I'm not going to let Nick's poorly thought out MVP ballot change my word on Chris Paul. It was masterful. Chris Paul was tremendous. Not only did he shoot the ball well, obviously he's got good numbers. He was a floor general. He defended well. He's done it all year. He has been phenomenal. I believe I had him third on my All-NBA team. But no, Nick, he wasn't the third in the MVP. Stop it.
I went with a different MVP. I also don't have a ballot, but I don't cry and whine about it on the show every day. I went with MVP PA, Most Valuable President of the Players Association. Chris Paul has to play, and then he has to go home, and who knows what he's doing. He doesn't even get to go home. He's got to go to his hotel room. Got to deal with all sorts of stuff. But I think Chris Paul's performance here and the amount of responsibility that he's shouldering within the bubble just makes this all the better.
All right, I'm done stealing from Nick. All the words moving forward now are mine. Ending with the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic finished with 25 points and 11 boards in their win over the Spurs last night, to which Greg Popovich said he's like a reincarnation of Larry Bird, to which Nick Wright fainted. Nick, Pop saying Jokic is a reincarnation of Larry Tomato Bird is blank.
All right, stop it, Pop. Pop, I love you. This is utter foolishness, and you know it. The only thing Jokic does even close to Bird's level is pass the ball. And it does raise to me, Broussard, a very interesting question. Would you rather be not even a poor man's Larry Bird, a homeless man's Larry Bird, or a rich man's Arvydas Sabonis? Because that's not a knock on Jokic. I say more like a rich man's Arvydas Sabonis, and this quote, come on. Put some respect on Larry Legend, the ninth greatest player in the history of basketball. Put some respect on his name, Pop. What are you talking about?
Ninth. That's a little low.
Look, ninth seems low.
That seems low. My phrase is a lesson to Nick Wright. Look, every time I mention how good Nikola Jokic is, Nick gives me this look like he wants to vomit. I told him I had Jokic third on my MVP ballot, and he would have thought I said Nikola Mirotic.
The ballot again. The ballot again. He brings up the ballot again.
Look, Nikola Jokic is legit. He does a lot. Look, he passes the ball. Bird was darn near a 7-footer, 6'9". He's tall. He plays on the perimeter. He can handle it. He can run the offense. He can shoot it with range. He does a lot of things that do remind you of Larry Bird. He's white, too. You know, we can't leave that out. But it was overstated. And the main thing is that not only is he not quite as good as Larry Bird, whereas Bird was arguably the best player in the league for several years, but he's a reluctant scorer. And Bird was far from a reluctant scorer. Of all the things he did, that may have been what he did best. So that's the main difference. I'm surprised Pop went there. However, it is a lesson to Nick Wright. That's how good Jokic is.
Oh, my God.
I've got a few things. One, it's odd to say put the respect on someone's name as being the ninth best. Like, when do you fall out of the respect category? Like, put respect on their name. They're the 27th best. And I'm like, I guess, if all time. But this seems too high of a number. Two, is it reincarnation for alive people? Don't you just go with, like, reminds me of? And three, just gives us an excuse to show the tomato. Until Jokic got a tomato that looked like him, then he deserves no sort of comparison to Larry Legend. And a great hat.
Y'all arguing about ninth. Like, marinate on this during the commercial break. LeBron, Jordan, okay. Kareem, Magic, Russell, Wilt, Duncan, Kobe, Bird. That's nine. Pick the guy he's better than.
Figure it out.
Danny Ainge. All right, take a break. Watching the Lakers. LeBron with a non-GOAT night last night. That didn't factor into AI's GOAT pick. Take a listen to this, guys.
Much as I love Michael Jordan, like, dog, man, LeBron James is the one, dog. He the one, man. Is the one. Kevin Durant is the one, man. The one.
Yeah, he's different
like that.
All right, gentlemen, time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Ram Trucks, built to serve, starting with a Sixer sidelined Ben Simmons had to leave yesterday's game against the Wizards with a left knee injury. His MRI would come back clean. He is still day-to-day. Nick, what could this mean for Simmons and the Sixers, though?
Well, it's just a brutal spot for Ben because if they play great, it probably hastens his potential exit from Philly. And if they play poorly, it puts him in a worse position come the playoffs. And he obviously believes, as I think a lot of people do, that the Sixers could go on a deep run. So it's just you need to see Simmons and Embiid healthy on the court together throughout this whole playoff run at Broussard. If Elton Brand's going to be able to make an educated decision this offseason about if he's going to make a major change with this team.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, chemistry, I mentioned it earlier, with those two on the floor, they just haven't figured out how to get those two to play at their best together. And this obviously isn't going to help, as they may not have even more time to play together. So, look, as far as Elton Brand making a move this summer, Nick, I wouldn't do it. I'd change the coaching staff, get a new head coach, but I would give them one more time, one more year under a new coach to see if they can figure out how to maximize their abilities together before I traded one of them.
So, Broussard, really quick, back to you. How far do the Sixers need to go to consider this bubble run a success?
Well, at least to the second round, and I'd say you go out maybe in seven in the second round against to a Milwaukee or something like that.
But that's what happened last year.
You might even say the conference. Yeah, yeah. But, you know.
Conference finals.
You might say, either way, I'd get rid of Brett Brown if I get out in the second round. I'd say that.
Either way, Brett Brown, you're gone.
If you Brett didn't get to the
conference, no matter what.
On to the finals countdown now. With Kevin Durant injured on the sideline for the Nets, that leaves him more time for two things: reading Twitter mentions and making anti-LeBron predictions. Kevin Durant has the Clippers beating the Bucks in the finals this season, guys, not the Lakers, and not his Nets, who at last check are actually still playing. Broussard, what do you make of the prediction?
His Nets, that had me chuckling, Jenna. Look, I think number one, he's thinking with his heart because I don't think he wants to see LeBron win another ring. But he's also thinking with his head, Nick, and the Clippers are the better team. They're deeper. They got more dog. They play better perimeter defense. They shoot the three ball better. They have the championship coach. I mean, they're a better team. And I picked the Clippers to win as well.
Broussard's a wily fella. He does these little linguistic tricks. He almost got me because I heard him say better defense. I'm like, better defense? And then I was like, oh, he said better perimeter defense. Like, I was like, oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess that it's probably a good point. Like, it's very, very tricky what you do to try to make your Clippers case. Because, Wild, here's one thing Broussard is not going to do to make his Clippers case. Say, watch the games. Because nobody the evidence is not watch the games. The evidence is it's what they're supposed to be. But in the Clippers, to their case, the Suns probably aren't going to be in the playoffs, so that should help their path because they obviously have a lot of trouble with them, Wilds.
Jenna, I know you were joking, but it is weird to not, and I didn't hear the entire interview, but it's like, it would be cool if he was just like, look at the Nets. Look for the Nets to make a run. I could see
not even a mention.
Nets, rarely do you see a guy
that would be, hold on real quick. It obviously can't happen, but would there be anything possible worse for KD than after he got no credit for the Warriors titles because they had already won? If the Nets somehow win the title with him not there, then he comes back and everyone's like, these rings don't count for you either, KD. None of it counts.
No, he deserves that.
This is worst nightmare.
Oh, that would be something. All right, on to the Lakers letdown now. A night to forget for LeBron and company. Lakers shooting just 35% from the field, going to season low 5 of 37 from deep in a loss to the Thunder. But wait, there's more. They have put up a season low 86 points in this game. So the LA Lakers are now 2-2 in the bubble. Nick, after what you saw last night, who do you think needs to step up most for the Lakers to make a run? I mean, besides Rondo.
All right, so listen, the easy answer is everyone taking jump shots. It is unbelievable that they have had their three worst field goal percentage performances of the entire season in the bubble. The Clipper game, the Raptor game, and then the game last night are their three worst shooting performances of the year. And last night doubled also as their worst three-point shooting performance of the year. If, on an individual level, though, it's obviously their two best guys. Anthony Davis has been awesome twice, and they won both those games. He's been bad, really bad twice, and they lost both those games. But I'm not putting this, by the way, on AD, though, because at least he's been awesome twice. LeBron hasn't. LeBron was really, really good in winning time against the Clippers, and he played like, a B-minus game against the Jazz. But in their losses, he's been dreadful. And so it doesn't concern me. If anyone is selling their Lakers stock, I will buy it. They're, I think, selling right now at $27 a share. I will eat that up for you. But LeBron's got to be better. I got to be fair, and by my calculations, he's been about the 68th best player in the bubble so far. That, Jenna, ain't great. And so, Broussard, they got to hit jump shots, and AD's got to be more consistent. But LeBron, first and foremost, has to play better.
That was a long way of Nick saying, everybody, I mean, they've all been bad to his points. Anthony Davis has been so inconsistent. He's been a roller coaster in the bubble. I mean, takes seven shots against Toronto, scores 9 points yesterday. Then we know about the monster performances against the Clippers and the Jazz. LeBron certainly hasn't been himself. I'm really not. He's the least of my concerns because he did show against the Clippers that when he wants to, he can lock you down defensively still, and he can still make the plays in the fourth quarter. So I'm not so much concerned about him. But their shooting is a problem. The one guy, believe it or not, who has been best in the bubble is Kyle Kuzma. Kyle Kuzma has been attentive defensively. He's been locked in. He's not a great defender by any stretch, but he's known his assignments, and he's been trying defensively, aggressive defensively, and done pretty well. And he shot the ball well. Caruso, is he adjusting to the minutes? Are the minutes too long for him? You know, he usually plays 18. Now he's playing about 24. Is that too much for him? Because we know he's not really a great player. He's just a good role player. So that's something to keep an eye on. But they've got to hit shots, and their stars do have to be better, as Nick said.
Do you think there's an element of let's work on our game, let's try some things out, and in the midst of experimenting, yes, it leads to, a bad field goal percentage. I know you're certainly not there thinking like, well, I want to miss this shot on purpose. I'm going to try extra hard. But that feels like when LeBron says his goal is health is wealth and is to go into the playoffs healthy, he's not saying he wants to win these games. And I feel like you're either at 100% or you're not. It's kind of a binary system, Nick.
And Wilds, during the mid-game interview yesterday, Vogel acknowledged as much, which is they're experimenting with new lineups. The thing is, none of them are working offensively. They've been the worst offensive team in the bubble. But, like, Markieff Morris is, you know, auditioning for playing time, and he's not – that audition ain't going well. My buddy JR, he's got to be better. Deion needs to look at Ben Simmons' shot chart and say, this is me. If it's at the rim, fine. Anywhere else, quit it. Just stop, Deion. They're contested bad jump shots. But the small silver lining, Broussard, is even in the midst of all of this, the defense has still been elite. They're still defending a top three in the bubble, the same rate they were in the regular season. But we're all saying don't overreact today. I think the Lakers are fitting to get whooped tonight. They're on a back-to-back against a team that is still fighting for seeding in Houston. And so I fully anticipate the Lakers will lose tonight. And Broussard, maybe people's alarm bells go off a little more. If they come out of the game healthy, I won't be too concerned.
I'm going to jump in here because we only got about a minute left, and I want to get to this. Bills quarterback Josh Allen recently asked about a throwing contest with Patrick Mahomes, of all people, to which Josh Allen said, quote, we're working on it. I'd love to finally settle this. So why in the world is our guy Nick Wright so upset about this? Nick, tell us.
No. As a guy who's had reconstructive shoulder surgery, Patrick, don't fall for the bait here. He's going to try to – the guy's got a cannon. You're going to try to throw it as hard as you can, tweak something, maybe never be the same. Let Josh Allen have this. It's the only thing he has is that he throws a long way. Let him have it. You can have everything else, Patrick. Don't get involved.
It's the only thing he has. We got to go. Broussard, thanks so much. See you tomorrow. Stay safe, everyone.